Today's sponsor is Home Theater Solutions. Absolutely love these guys. HTS is your local technology expert, serving Delaware for 16 years. Home Theater Solutions specializes in TV installations, home automations, Sonos audio systems, security cameras, and Wi-Fi networks. For all of your home and business tech needs, give them a call, 1-800-690-2029, or visit htsav.net. All right, good morning and welcome back. This is the Rehoboth Social Podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. It is July the 25th, 2022. It's hot. It's Monday. And it's time to do a podcast. Good morning. How are you, buddy?
Tom, I'm awesome. Thanks for having me, buddy.
It is hot. Well, a little breezy today. Thank you, Breeze.
I'll take it. This early in the morning, I'll take it, as opposed to like excruciating heat. So,
man, yesterday, this weekend was oppressive. I mean, I couldn't even, the pool didn't even bring any relief. It was like swimming in hot soup.
Swimming in hot soup. Yeah, that could be the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, well, maybe not boiling hot, but it was definitely Luke. Well, listen, it is Monday, and you are Eric Rittmeyer, and you are from the Life Med Institute. You just popped into the town all of a sudden. I don't know where you came from, but there you were. My wife's like, there's a place. We got to check it out. So let's talk about it. How are you doing?
Yeah, awesome. And we're just so excited to be here. We've been under construction for quite a while now. So our main facility is in Timonium, which is in Baltimore County, Maryland.
Right.
And we were under construction down here for a while, getting everything exactly the way we want it to be. And it's just been insane how awesome everybody's been to us. Just we've seen so many people come through and so much word of mouth and just tons of awesome people.
So you are located, what was there? Because you're located where Weiss used to be. Now it's empty, I think. Unless, do we know what's going in down there?
Good question.
Good question. Okay.
So we're right down from, is it Agave is the restaurant?
Is it? No, it's Michie's.
Michie's, but right down the strip. We're in the same strip as Michie's, but the Agave is like right up the strip. Agave, I think it's called.
Yeah, you are not near Agave. I mean, you're in the same town.
Right. It was like a couple minutes up the street.
Well, we want to make sure we put, you know, because Agave's got, there's no place. I mean, it's packed down there. So you're down where, across from Giant. You're kind of cattywampus from AT&T. You're on the other side of Safeway. Listen, it's busy down here. You don't want to send anybody to the wrong place because it could be a nightmare.
Yes.
So you were where Weiss, well, you're not even, where Weiss used to be is gone, but you're just to the left. So you're to the right, actually, of Pete's Steak Shop.
And it's, yes, exactly. Then it's the seashell, silly sail seashores by the seashell.
Yeah, you're behind that.
Exactly.
Yeah, so what's going on over there? What services are you providing? It's, you know, everybody loves a good med spa.
They sure do. Yeah. So we're referred ourselves as we're concierge wellness. So we're wellness, not sickness.
Right.
That's a good thing right now, too, especially in the age of COVID.
You don't want to be known as a sickness center.
I mean, nobody wants sickness.
A wellness center.
So people come to us to stay healthy. That's the key. So we specialize in cardiac preventative medicine, age management, aesthetics, facial contouring, lip fillers, Botox. Hormone replacement therapies is really the core of what we do.
Yeah.
We do a blood panel. We check everything that's happening internally. Then one of our providers, when you sit down with them, they make suggestions based on their findings.
Well, I can tell you, and you know, it's been a rough weekend because my great-grandmother, my wife's great-grandmother, so she's my great-grandmother too. she passed, and she was 99, and she just didn't give up. I mean, it was just a rough couple weeks. And I always, my father and I laugh. I say, it's because she used to run marathons in her 70s. And she did. She was running marathons in her 70s. And it was just, you know, it was tough. You know, clearly working out definitely extends your life. I don't know if we're always prepared to be 99 years old. I have a buddy that says he wants to live to 120. I'm not sure. You know, I think a nice solid 88, right? 85, 88 is a good number, but 99, you know, it's not like she was just still running marathons, right? So, right. You know, it's been a tough weekend, but I think the reason she did so well for so long is because she was, and you mentioned cardiac. I mean, I think running like she did in her 70s and running a full marathon, I think that was a big help for her.
We know it's funny you say that, Tom. So there was actually, I was reading about a study they did and they polled people asking, how long, what's the optimal age? How long do you want to live for?
Right.
And they asked a question saying, you know, who wants to live to your 100? And there were very few people who said, I'd like to live to 100. Then the second part of it was, who wants to live to 100 if you're healthy and you feel the same way you do when you're in your 70s? And obviously everybody was like, yes, I would love to. So the key is, most people assume that when you get to that age, your health just totally deteriorates. There are things you can do to slow that down. Obviously, we can't prevent aging, but we can slow that down. And that's ultimately what we're about, just holding back the hands of time. We're just trying to do as much as we can to stay as healthy as possible.
Well, I think, unfortunately, people come to this conclusion that in their 50s and 60s that, you know, maybe I need to start taking care of myself so I can live a longer life. But, you know, we should really try to take care of ourselves earlier, right? I think even the stuff that we just went through the last couple of years kind of exposed, you know, we like ice cream. We like, you know, snacks and stuff. I mean, we need, you know, we need to maybe address our health maybe a little earlier so that it isn't this help me quickly in our 50s and 60s and 70s.
Well, it's funny. So I was in the Marine Corps, and I remember like when I got out of the Marine Corps.
Yeah. I've already heard a few hoorah.
When I got out of the Corps, you know, I remember everybody saying like, hey, like, you know, you've done some damage to your body over the last few years in the Corps. You're going to realize this the older you get. Now, I'm 48 now, so over the last few years, I've started to recognize the knees, the back, all that good stuff. So it's one of those things where when you're young, you're just indestructible, right? There's nothing you can do. And then all of a sudden, it starts to catch up. So the key is trying to stay ahead of the curve so you don't wait until you start to feel poorly. You proactively do things that will delay that, hopefully, indefinitely, so you never have to deal with the craziness. But if you don't address it, and you just go out there like there's no tomorrow, your body's going to start to feel it.
Well, so you're 48. I'm going to be 54 this year. And at 54, the biggest thing right now for me is stretching.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the older I get, everything just gets tight. And, you know, you don't realize it, or I didn't realize it. But, you know, like if I said, you know, and I'm pointing over at our front door, but like if you hung on that door and I opened it back and forth 50 times while you hung on it, that hinge would grind, right? And I don't think we realize it. I didn't realize it, but there's things in my body that get so tight that it's like hanging on that hinge. And, I mean, I'll be like, God, what's up with my hip? Like, I haven't done anything, and it's just that, you know, something's gotten tight. So at a guy at 54, what I'm realizing is stretching is key in my life to feel good.
And it's inertia, right? What's in motion remains in motion. Right. That's what I've recognized. Like, now it's like I have to continually move. I have to keep going, because the minute you sit still – it's my philosophy with retirement. As long as you can continue to work, you should do that, because once you stop working, everything starts to slow down at that point.
Well, and I think if I don't get up in a day and work, I don't really feel, I mean, I'm okay, right? I'll be fine. But there's something about a good day's worth of work that allows me to be happy at the end of the day, you know? But when you don't work at all, or you're not doing anything at all, you tend to start focusing on yourself. And you're like, what am I not getting? What am I getting? And it becomes this thing. It almost like, I like to say, you know, I'm not living unless I'm suffering. And I, you know, work sometimes suffering, you know, getting up, taking care of my kids is sometimes suffering. But that's what brings, you know, humility. That's what brings peace to allow me to enjoy the things that come in my life.
And that's a great point. I think that's why our business model works so well, because our patients, when they come in, almost every single time they say the same thing. They're like, look, I'm tired. I don't have energy. I know I need to get to the gym. I can't do it. Like, what came first, the chicken or the egg? If I go to the gym, I'll have more energy, but I don't have energy to go to the gym.
I can't get there.
Exactly. So yeah. It's like, what came first? So I feel like that's why our model works so well, because a lot of times when we do that initial blood panel, and again, this is a 75 marker blood panel. It's advanced biochemical testing. We're checking for hormones, genetics, cardiac particle sizes, metabolic, kidney, liver function, glucose levels, thyroid levels, inflammation markers, vitamins, checking for everything internally. So what normally ends up happening is when that blood panel comes back, there's a reason. There's something that's causing that inability to remain active, or the inability to sleep, or the inability to lose weight. There's normally something happening internally, and that's what we focus on so people can live their best lives.
What do you think usually is the biggest one?
Normally for guys, it's testosterone, shortage of testosterone. There are lots of misconceptions about that. You know, people hear testosterone, they freak out. They think steroids, roid raging, which is just not accurate. I mean, our business model is look at the hormone levels for guys and for girls. Look at the hormone levels. Normally for guys, it's low testosterone. For ladies, premenopausal, perimenopausal, or postmenopausal, it's a hormone imbalance. So if we're able to supplement that, get those levels back to being normal again, they feel good. Brain fog goes away, night sweats, all those things that are really plaguing them right now. We can correct a lot of that.
When does that start usually becoming a thing? Because I know at 54, I got brain fog. But, you know, I blame it all on COVID right now. Everything's mm-hmm. from COVID. But I do feel this change in my life where, you know, my buddy and, James and I, we'd run 4 or 5 days a week, you know, 5-6 miles a day. And now I just don't feel like running. I'm like, eh, just not into it. I've lost my drive. But, figuring out what was motivating me in the first place, you know, breakups, you know, all of a sudden you want to be part of something. You want to start feeling better. All of a sudden you want to be a little more unique, right? Unique through physique, right? So you get into this whole thing and then you start finding happiness again. And then you're like, I'm just relaxing for a while. So I don't know. Is that because my life is good or is that because my testosterone has gone down?
Well, it's a combination of everything, right? So when you hear wellness, a lot of times you think the physical piece of it. But wellness is more than just physical. It's physical, it's emotional, it's spiritual, social, intellectual. There's all these components that equate to happiness and wellness. From our angle, from the physical piece of it, a lot of times what we find, especially for guys at our age, the testosterone levels is what normally is causing all those issues. If we're able to supplement it, get it back to a level that it was 10, 15, 20 years ago, the energy comes back. We're happy again. We feel great. We drop some body fat. It's just a good thing. And again, you're under the care. And the big thing with us is you're under the care of a medical professional. Our medical director is a 40-plus year cardiologist. Right. And the key with all these things, because hormone replacement therapy is the buzz, right? This is what everything is now. Everything's hormone replacement therapies. You read about it. You see about it everywhere. The key is understanding how it truly works. And it's not for everyone. Not every single living, breathing human who is lethargic and doesn't have energy needs testosterone. There could be a vitamin shortage. There could be something else happening there that maybe is a simple, you know, take a multivitamin.
How do you, it's funny because, like, a lot of the things that have happened in my life have been motivated by, you know, whether it's me trying to serve self or me wrecking self and me trying to get out of this predicament. But is it hard to explain to people or is it possible to explain to people to trigger figuring out what the true motivation is behind them wanting to get healthy, right? You know, because sometimes, you know, like my father, he's 85 and, you know, he doesn't do a lot. I mean, he's pretty active for an 85 year old, lives by himself, he takes care of himself, he does well. But, you know, he will sit in his house and he'll get into the news and he'll get into emails, you know, that generation, they love the email. My dad loves it. I got emails, you know, so he gets these emails from his buddies and they get into it. And, you know, and the fact that he's not out there doing a lot, he can kind of sit and wallow in it. And sometimes I'll say, you know, we try to have him over a few days during the week and he'll debrief, so to speak. You know, I saw this and then he's like, you know, he gets feeling better. And I say, like, he'll go down to a physical therapy place and they'll go walk the boardwalk. He has to go walk on the boardwalk. And then he's like, oh, so much better. And I'm like, you know, do you see how that works, Dad? And he doesn't get it, right? He just does what he does and just takes what he takes. But it's like, there's a thing in life that, and I know I said suffering, but, you know, we have to do something to break us out of that self-centered capsule that we end up getting in. And it's not, I always say, why aren't we bigger fans of ourselves, right? We're like, I don't wake up and say, go run, buddy, let's run. I wake up and go, do not run. Your knees hurt, you're tired, it's cold, it's hot, it's whatever. I'm not a big fan. How do we try to identify those feelings and trying to find the right motivation? Because, listen, there's a lot of pink clouds in life. And sometimes you'll do something like the first day you try to go to a gym, you're like, this is great, and you feel awesome. And it's really the humility, right? Doing the opposite of what you would have rather have done, but that starts to wear off, and then we start to fade away and lose our motivation. How do you find the right doing things rightly? How do you do it?
Yeah, so you bring up a good point, Tom, and like I talked about before we went on air here is the mental toughness piece. What I speak on with mental toughness, which is ultimately emotional control, right? That's what mental toughness is. It's about creating and finding our why, like what it is that drives us. So once we have something that drives us, we can then say, okay, this is what I'm unhappy with. I can correct this unhappiness by focusing on what it is that drives me, as opposed to relying on motivation. This is a problem with a lot of exercise, with a lot of dieting. Why do 90%+ of all New Year's resolutions fail before the end of the first month of the year? I'll tell you why. It's because we set these goals and we rely on motivation to attain the goals. Well, motivation is based off of how we feel. If we wake up in the morning, we feel good, we stick to it. If we wake up in the morning, we feel bad, we're on the couch with an 18-inch pizza and a tub of ice cream, right, as opposed to finding something that drives us, an emotionally charged why. Once we develop that why, create that why, we focus on that, and then guess what? The dissatisfaction, the pain that we have to get whatever it is that we want, the pain's easy at that point because I'm focusing on why I'm doing what I'm doing. Most people are missing that why.
Do you think it's better to have long-term goals or short-term? Because I know, I just want to get up, go for a walk, and then see what's left. Some people are like, I just want to lose 50 pounds, and this is going to be, you know, it's like, I can't do it that way. I can't be like, this is my goal. I really have to find some sort of peace in the day. Like, I just want small goals. Let me just get up, go for a nice little walk, come back, and then see where I feel, see how I feel about taking on the rest of the day. Do you work with small goals, long-term goals, or do you just take each person individually and figure out what they need?
So I personally believe, regardless of whether it's short-term or long-term, I think that piece is really irrelevant. Mm-hmm. For me, it's focusing on why it is that you want whatever it is that you want.
Yeah.
So if you can focus on the why, the how becomes easy.
Right.
So we put so much emphasis on ABCs and 1-2-3s as opposed to the thought processes, and then what we're able to do when the going gets tough, guess what? I don't care that I'm tired. I'm going to continue to go after this goal because it's for my kids. It's for my spouse. It's for whatever. Most people are missing that emotionally charged why. Very few people have it.
Do you guys, and I haven't been over there. Like I was explaining to you, we've been moving, and we started moving on the last Wednesday, and I'm physically worked out. Okay. I don't need any workout right now. It's been hot, but this is what we've been doing. We've been chatting with you back and forth, but this move thing's been going on for like a year. So, you know, it's been a thing. We're finally getting in this house, so we do want to come by and check out the place. I know my wife does. She loves that kind of stuff. Oh, the new place is open, and I need to go over and get an IV drip or something. I'm like, okay. So we're going to come by and check it out. But is it all, I mean, do you guys have like workout classes? Is it about diet? Is it only cardio? What is it? Walk me through a day over at your spot.
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned the IVs. That's a big part of what we do. Yeah. So we have an IV lounge. You have to come in. We have massage chairs. There's blue lights. There's a bubble wall. We have Wi-Fi. It's an awesome environment. You sit down. You get a 500-milliliter bag of saline, so you're rehydrating with that. And then we add water-soluble nutrients to it, all your B vitamins, vitamin C, calcium, magnesium, glutathione. The objective is to replenish in your body what's probably missing, which is probably causing a lot of, you know, the stresses you deal with, you're going to have every single day.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to handle those stresses. If your body's functioning correctly, if you have everything it needs, it's going to make those easier. So the IVs is a great place. Any new patient who comes out, anybody who's like, what do you guys do? How do you do it? We always recommend come out and get an IV. Sit down, check out the facility. You're going to feel great afterwards. You get a good idea of what we do, how we do it. It's just a peaceful, cool place to just relax. That's what it's all about. Relax. We have Wi-Fi. If you want to come in and work, you can definitely work.
Wi-Fi is so important right now.
Oh my, it's like everything revolves around the Wi-Fi. Well, but we'd like you to come out and have a good time, basically.
Well, what I was going to, so when I, you know, I think I told you that I've been sober for a long time. And when I first got sober, I was big friends with a guy named Matt. And I remember the first thing I talked to him about, he says, first thing I want you to do is just drink a lot of water, mm-hmm. go for a nice walk, get a nice fresh air, eat some clean food, and then start seeing how you feel. And, you know, whether it's an, you know, addiction or just old age or just bad habit, but I don't think we drink enough water, and I don't think we eat well enough, and I don't think we get enough exercise. So, you know, addressing those three things, you know, can bring almost a person right out of this place that they've been, where it's all been like bad health and mental health, but it's really just the lack of, you know, doing some of the basic essential things.
And it's funny too, Tom, because a lot of times, like what you're saying, a lot of times is the issues that people are going through could be corrected by things they don't even recognize, meaning that somebody's tired, they think they're not getting enough sleep, which is probably a big piece of it. Mm. But there could be a deficiency somewhere out here way in left field that nobody's even paying attention to. Yeah. We correct that one thing, and all of a sudden, everything else starts to come into play. Everything else now is all right. So as it relates to people coming out trying to get better and trying to feel better, this is our thing. It's what we do. That's our goal. It's because when you start feeling better, your relationships at home are better. You work better. You know, we have plenty of people who come out who are just unhappy in their jobs. Now all of a sudden they're back. They got that pep in their step again. They're going back out there. They're feeling good. They wake up. They feel confident.
Yeah.
Sexual vitality. That's another big thing. We're really, really, we have a process called Gains Wave and Femi Wave. This is a machine that we use.
Okay, let's talk about the gains, waves, and femi waves.
So for a lot of issues with sexual vitality for guys, especially like with ED, right?
It's that's what I was wondering if we're going to, I mean, that's a big motivator, I think, for a lot of
people. It is.
Yeah.
It is. And here's the issue for a lot of guys, especially, right? It's not something people like to talk about. It's an embarrassing thing. Yeah. For guys, the issue is blood flow. It's lack of blood flow. So there's a machine, it's Gainswave, where we basically create these micro injuries in that area. It's sound wave therapy, non-invasive. There's nothing surgical about it. You get numbed up in that area. The machine creates these little like micro injuries, increases blood flow, because that's the problem with guys, plaque buildup, lack of blood flow. You go through that process, and at the end of it, we do what's called the P shot. So we take your blood, it's called PRP, platelet-rich plasma. We take those platelets, and they get injected back into the penis to increase blood flow. For ladies, same process for Gainswave. It's great for urinary incontinence, creates those little micro injuries in the area. At the end of the Gainswave, at the end of the FemiWave, they're actually able to do what's called the O shot. Same concept, withdraw blood, take the platelets, gets injected back into the clitoris. It's all designed to increase blood flow.
Oh boy. That's some good stuff.
Sounds pretty intense, right?
Yeah. I didn't realize, so it's not a matter of being, you know, manly, it's blood flow.
It's lack of blood flow. That's normally the issue. Now, there's other problems. There's other things that could be causing it, right? So we don't just automatically look at someone who comes to us with ED issues for guys and say, oh, it's definitely lack of blood. There could be other issues. There could be prostate problems. I mean, there's absolutely other things. Blood pressure could be high.
Bad
blood
relationship.
Bad relationship. It could be.
I love that commercial for the ED pill, and it's this like super hot supermodel and this super hot supermodel guy, and they can't seem to get it together. And I'm like, one of them are probably an asshole. Like, there's probably other issues other than just looks. They're both beautiful people. It's like someone's got a bad attitude in there.
They're contributing factors.
Yeah.
And it's funny, too. Well, I guess funny is not the correct term. It's part of what I love are the people who come back in after they come to our facility, and whether it be they go through our sexual vitality or just the blood panels and the hormone levels, whatever, but the people who come back in and tell us how we saved their marriage or saved their relationship. Because a lot of times when it comes to sexual vitality, one person has a problem, the other person automatically assumes that they're cheating on them, that they don't love them. Meanwhile, with just a medical condition, that could be corrected.
Well, and then you say something like that, and then all of a sudden it's another layer. It's all layers, right? It's just layers of nonsense. And you know, you like the physical part, I'm into the mental part. I'm like, peel back the layers. Let's clear out the garbage. Because there's a lot of junk that's in there that keeps us hung up on stuff. Sometimes all it takes is an accusation or a comment, and all of a sudden, that's the it.
Well, it's communication, Tom, right? The other big thing I talk about, right? Yeah. So as a society, unfortunately, we're listening with the intent to reply, not with the intent to understand. Most relationships, you have parties of people who are just not getting to the core of what the issue is, like you said.
Yeah.
If you don't communicate correctly, then those things fester. It's the crack in the foundation. All of a sudden, one simple thing that could be very easily correctable with a one-on-one conversation now just blossoms off into all these other things. And like you said, layering on top of layering on top of layering. So if people aren't communicating, that's an issue. But especially as it relates to health problems, the older we get, these are things that are going to happen. We try to find a way to minimize those things so you can, again, just live happy and healthy.
Yeah, well, I see it all the time. We get hung up on one thing and we just can't seem to get past it. And then it just keeps snagging more stuff. And it's like, you know, it happens with even in my marriage. And it's, you know, we won't say something or all like a resentment will come up and we won't expose the resentment and we'll just kind of carry it around. And then it just becomes bigger and bigger. And then the next thing you know, we're having trouble communicating and, you know, we're having trouble like getting things done, coming to, you know, a conversation where we both agree on something to get something moved forward. We have trouble with that. It's like, hold on, let's stop a second here. Let's figure out what's going on, because this isn't about a pill, right? This isn't about, you know, diet. This is just because we're not communicating and we're not talking about it.
And another huge issue is social media, obviously, right? I mean, that's just a whole nother problem in and of itself. We're a society now, it's more concerned about social, you know, we don't want to interact socially at all. It's more about social media and social interaction. And if we're missing something in relationships, social media is a very great, easy, quick way to find whatever it is that we're deficient in our relationships. And as bad as it sounds, just call it what it is. I mean, social media has definitely been a problem for a lot of relationships. And if it's not addressed and if it's not used in moderation, it could be a bad thing.
Well, it's also easy to blame that on.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it's not like, so did you ever watch that? Did you see the new show on HBO Max called The Gilded Age?
Mm-mm.
It's kind of like, it's from the same people that did Downton Abbey, the show over that was done in, I guess, in England. But it's, you know, it's that 1800s. And, you know, they used to sit on the front porch and they'd watch people, you know, that or through the window, and they'd talk about them. And there was a whole, you know, and they'd write letters, and it was a whole thing. It was all social media. It's all social media. Mm-hmm. It's just we have more platforms now. But, you know, and it's not really, I mean, it's new, but it's not, I think what's new is the ability to use it as an excuse and blame everything, you know, like, oh, so that's social media's problem. That's because of social media. And I'm not sure, you know, I can tell you as a father of three kids, thank God sometimes for social media, because if not, I'd have to like partake with my kids all the time, right? And I'm just being honest. It's nice when your kids get on their iPad for a couple hours and you're like, you know, need a little break. But, you know, we all play a role in what our kids are doing.
100%. And I'm not a fan of, you know, oh, teachers are responsible for my kids. Like, as parents, we have to accept responsibility for the way our kids are raised. The biggest issue I see with social media, especially as it relates to children, is it's the inability for them to find happiness without the interaction on social media, meaning that if they post a picture and they don't get likes, that determines whether or not they're happy or whether or not they're motivated, which is scary. They're totally relying on it. So there's lots of studies now that show that social media, it'll actually release dopamine just like any other type of thing you're doing that's enjoyable, right? Your brain releases dopamine. It's the pleasure chemical. Social media, interaction on social media releases that same type of dopamine. Now, here's the problem. Kids have untethered access, 24/7 access to this dopamine machine via cell phone, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that totally determines their happiness. It's equivalent to me with my kids saying, hey, my teenage daughters, I'm going to the beach for the weekend, fully stocked the liquor cabinet downstairs, unlocked, have fun with it, see you Monday morning. Same exact thing. So if we don't teach them and let them understand, hey, it's wonderful to have, but your world does not revolve around social media. It's great for certain things, like you said. But if we don't interact, if we don't help our kids understand why, if we allow social media to dictate what they're doing, they're not going to be happy and they're going to be searching for something that just doesn't exist.
So what is social media? I know it's a dumb question, but what is social media?
So if you were to ask me what social media is.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you, what is it? What's social media?
Social media for me is a way for people to get attention. That's
okay,
what
so mean. Like, so there's looking at social media, and then there's people that are like into posting and creating a brand through social media.
Yeah, so there's the business aspect of it, right? So there's obviously the business, there's the personal aspect. If you were to take the business piece of it, it's an unbelievable way to market. It's an unbelievable way to create a brand, essentially for free. I mean, there's really no cost. You can do pay-per-click, you can do all that, but it's a wonderful way to build business. As it relates to personal life, I personally believe people rely on social media for happiness. They want to have the life. They want to make everybody feel the way, you know, this is what I got, this is what I have. I personally believe the bulk of people who are on social media, who are having the social media, they can't find happiness without social media. So if you asked, give me 100 people and you said, hey, you can not have any social media for 1 month, you're totally done, you're finished, you'd find a lot of unhappy people that would probably be willing to give up a lot of other things before they would give up social media. In my mind, again, it's all about moderation. But if you can't find happiness from the person that you're with sitting right next to you or your immediate family, if you're relying on all these other exterior forces from all these other people that, let's be realistic, you have friends on Facebook, how many of them are you truly, truly friends with? How many of them do you call on their birthdays, not HBD on their page, right?
So, I put the gift emoji. Come on.
That's better than HBD.
I know. Thank you.
But I call this 4 quarters versus 100 pennies,
well,
right?
Well, is this in the eyes of a couple old guys?
It might be.
Because, you know, we raise these goddamn kids. I mean, this is, you know, is it uncomfortable for me and you? Because as an older people, we love to evaluate the youth, right? Yeah, if back in my day, right? But it's a different world, mm-hmm. right? Are we saving them or are we aggravating ourselves?
I think it's a combination of both.
It's a combination of both. Because I can tell you, I have three kids. I have a 10 and 11 who are deep into like the TikTok and all of the stuff on the computer. My 17-year-old has an Instagram. He doesn't have any posts. In fact, but he's in Germany right now on the trip of a lifetime with his mother, and we've been communicating through Instagram's Reels mm-hmm. or through Instagram's FaceTime, which is free, apparently. You can't use FaceTime, you can't text, because that all costs money, but you can communicate through Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
So he doesn't post anything on there. But the other kids, you know, but like my daughter says, yeah, Daddy, I just want to tell you, there's been a creeper on my Roblox or whatever they do. They have, and you know, as parents, we're like, you know, these creepers that are on there, they're going to take away our kids. Well, our kids, my daughter's like, there's been a creeper. He was trying to befriend me, so we blocked him. And my son Sam's like, yeah, we blocked that guy. You know, these kids are more aware than I think we realize. We like to create this scenario like they're going to, you know, they're just idiots, right? Someone's friended me. I'm going to friend them. Come meet me at the store and then off to Utah or somewhere they head, you know. And it just doesn't seem to happen like that. You know, these kids are on it. Do you want a kid that's completely oblivious to social media? And when I ask what is social media, because their social media is basically early versions of the meta. They play Roblox. They go in these games. They have tons of friends in there. And they have, like, legitimate groups of friends that, you know, from different countries all over around. But they're kids, and they all kind of know it. And, I mean, are they building skills that way that you and I would – like, if you and I went on Roblox, we would be complete idiots, right? We wouldn't know because we don't have any interest in it. But eventually, that will be the world. We will be – they're already creating the meta. One day, you and I will do this podcast through – some sort of metaverse where you have some cool marine emoji and I got like some cool hairdresser emoji and we'll laugh and have fun. But that is the future. Or do we want kids that are completely oblivious to being able to do that? Or is it because you and I don't know how to do it, it's bad?
Well, first off, I have no idea what Roblox is.
Well, you shouldn't. It's for children.
My kids.
But Roblox is a place that they go and they play games. There's tons of different games, throwing a football game. It's silly. But it's a world. It's sure. A meta world. It's Roblox. And these kids invest a lot of money. Parents, as a parent of kids that have it, I've invested a lot of money for them. You know, can I have $5? Here's $5. You know, my daughter lost her Roblox account. She's like, all the money that I've invested into my Roblox is gone. And I'm like, we'll try to figure it out, honey. Don't stress out, you know. And she found it. But it's a big thing. It's like, it's an investment for them.
It is. And aside from the fact that I don't know what Roblox is, here's my thought process on this. We have to remember we're dealing with children, right? So their level of mental capacity and their understanding is not the same level as yours and mine as adults. So dealing with kids who have that level of, you know, they don't fully recognize and understand. So my concern is I understand there's benefits to it, but what's missing? What does that prevent them from doing now that they have social media? Number one, it pretty much eliminates the need to see somebody eye to eye, to pick up the phone and talk with them verbally, which our generation, the inability to hop on and text message somebody required us to sit down in person and communicate. I don't care what anybody says. Communication is 1,000 times more effective when you are speaking with someone or seeing eye to eye to someone. This
for
is
you and me.
For us, because it's what we grew up with.
That's what we grew up with.
If there was no social media, our children would learn the same exact skills the same exact way we did. You had to.
Right.
Sink or swim. This is what you got to do. You have a problem with somebody, you'll see them at lunchtime, you'll handle the issue. Not get on social media, not dragging somebody through the mud, not witnessing a fight at school and thinking the very first thing I should do is pick up my cell phone and record. That's a problem for me. Like, what is it about it where you now see fights in the hallway and somebody's getting beat up and the first instinct of these kids is to pull out their phone and video?
So, and I agree. I think that's fucking disturbing.
But
we can't, you know, we have to make sure that we don't classify everything as that. That is not social media. That is just people trying to be unique. And I feel like we've been doing that all our lives. You know, there was a time where towns were built around a church, right? And it was all a place you get up and you walk to the church. You walk to your friends. And then the car was invented. And that, you know, I've heard stories that there was this kind of behind the scenes, like, let's make towns bigger so that you need a car. You know, we need to use cars. And all of a sudden now we're not just walking and talking, we're driving. So we're losing something there. It's always something being lost, but it's always being lost to the generation before. You know, but like, oh, I remember. You know, but what's it going to be like? You know, who knows what the future is going to be like? But I know that it is, you know, it's not ours. It's our kids.
Well, and here's the issue I think too, Tom, and I feel like as we grew up, there were common threads that we had, right? So we went through different phases. There were at times of war, that was our common thread. Mm. Church used to be the common thread. It was kind of like home base. So it was the one thing that brought everybody back together. Same thing with the military, like the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps, that's home base. So regardless of where you come from, who you grew up with, who you go to bed with, what you believe in, at the core of it, you're a Marine. There's a mission. That's the common thread. It brings everybody back together. One thing I think that social media has eliminated is that thread. So I feel like there's just no camaraderie. There's nothing that brings everybody back. So it's everybody going a million different directions, making everybody feel like I have nothing in common with anybody. which is really not the case. Because as when we grew up, like when we did, we found things that brought us together. The family structure was a big piece of it. I mean, let's call it like it is. The lack of family structure right now is a major, major problem.
Yeah.
Households do not, it's difficult to do. I'm raising my two teenagers on my own. I've had full custody of them for 6 years. I'm a father trying to raise two teenage daughters. There's a component missing by not having a female to raise my daughters. There's a component missing. Same thing. I grew up with my grandparents. My grandfather raised me. My grandfather did an amazing job raising me. There's a component. If boys especially don't have male role models, and I'm not saying opposite sexes can't raise children,
sure,
but you want to go to the core of all these problems, take out social media, take out everything. It's a breakdown of the family structure.
Well, what happens if like my family, we don't have any problems?
Sure. And I'm not, and again, that's it's not 100% of the time, but if you get to the core of it, at the core of it is children need mom and dad, or male and female.
Right.
And again, let's call it like it is. Divorce rates are high. When divorce happens, the dad leaves. Not all the time, obviously, but the dad leaves. There's a breakdown. There's a problem there. Look at Baltimore City. Look at the problems around in Baltimore City. I mean, how crazy is that down there?
Yeah.
Is there any surprise that 70% of households in Baltimore are without fathers, single parent households? Chicago, all these places where you have the most crime, you go back to the very, very core of the issue. And this is the problem, I think, is nobody wants to get to the core of the issue. I'm in the process of writing my next book, and it's called The Core. Instead of CORPS like Marine Corps, it's CORE. The whole premise of my book is if we want to solve problems, we have to get to the core of the problem. Stop trying to treat the effect, get to the cause. The issue is when we start addressing the cause, it gets people upset because there's topics they don't want to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah, well, when you write that book, come back on the podcast because I'm into it. I mean, I personally believe we just don't suffer enough. I think it's just a big me, get me what I want, please me, make me happy. And, you know, the outcome to me does not look good, honestly. There's no way we can continue because it's just this desire to be better and be liked and have more fun and, you know, at a cheaper cost. You know, I feel like the biggest problem that we're going through right now is that zero people want to be accountable for getting us to the place that got us that we're in the first place. You know, this is all, you know, people love to blame different countries and different people. But, you know, everything that we've done has always been about either making money or getting something for cheaper.
Mm-hmm. And here's the issue, right? This is part of my mental toughness training. Regardless of whether you're happy where you are, sad where you are, whatever, you are 100% responsible for the position you're in.
That's right.
If you do not accept responsibility, now I'm not going to take anything away from things that can happen. Right? I was married for 19 years. My wife had a ruptured brain aneurysm. She survived surgery. Afterwards, she had frontal lobe injury. It totally changed her. There's going to be things that happen. So by all means, there's these exterior factors. But ultimately, again, get to the core of it. The core of it is where you are, you put yourself there based on decisions you've made.
Right.
You can correct them. You can change them. You can adjust them. To blame somebody else does nobody any good. It's a defense mechanism. I am where I am because of something else that happened I had zero control over.
Right.
Really not the case. You actually had 100% control over it. It all goes back to a decision you made that was a very bad decision probably.
Exactly. Well, and it's just buying. I mean, you know, people love to blame, you know, whether it's a president or somebody else for all the problems that we have. We got ourselves here. We absolutely got ourselves here, and we need to be accountable for it. And if we want to change it, then we individually have to change it.
And here's another thing.
We can't just make the whole East Coast change, right? The whole East Coast should change. It's one person at a time. It's conversations like this, you know, where maybe it's hard for a whole group to say, okay, maybe we're at fault. But maybe if two people get together and say, all right, between you and me, I think we got us here.
Well, we have to get much, much better at accepting opposing points of view.
Right.
We cannot allow our brains to shut down the minute somebody produces a fact that conflicts with the warm, fuzzy feeling that we have, which is ultimately the problem right now. We have a bunch of people who are allowing their subjective perceptions to override objective observations, meaning that what I feel in my heart supersedes what I see with my eyes. That's a problem. Because when we stop allowing ourselves to hear and see things that we don't agree with, that's a major issue. And now that's where we are. The minute somebody says something we disagree with, we shut down, we yell, we scream, we get angry. We're incapable of hearing somebody else's side of the story because we don't like it, because it conflicts with our heart. Right. That's a major problem. And you have dense constant conflict. People don't want to say they're sorry. By apologizing, it doesn't mean that I'm saying I'm right and you're wrong. It just says I value our relationship more than I value my ego. We can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So we allow it to ruin relationships, family members. People go through life being angry for no reason. Like, what am I upset about? But if we can't open our eyes and allow ourselves to hear and see facts, even though it hurts, even though it stings, even though internally we might be saying, you know what? Tom's making a good point. I totally have never seen it from this point of view, but he's making a good point. If I don't allow myself to hear what he's saying, I'm just sitting inside my own little cardboard box.
Right.
And all I'm going to do is continue to get angry at stuff and think I have zero control, where if I was just able to hear what he's saying and without getting angry, everything would be better. But we can't do that. We're emotional creatures, right? We get very, I get called emotional intoxication. We get very, very intoxicated in emotion to the point where we can't think logically. Once we're intoxicated in emotion and we're running around just yelling and screaming and knee-jerk reactions to everything, nothing happens. Nothing gets solved because all we're doing is just being upset with people who we disagree with. That's the problem.
I wanted to start a podcast called I Think We Just Got Off on the Wrong Foot.
That's a good, I love that.
Yeah, because I feel like every relationship with any person on the planet, you know, good or bad, if it's bad, maybe just got off on the wrong foot. You know, there's no real reason why we all just can't be like, yeah, that's fine. I agree. Or I do disagree, but I still think you're pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, why can't we just all just get along?
It's like Hakuna Matata, right? It means right. No worries. And it's so crazy because we allow other people to dictate our happiness. Mm. This is the problem, right? I mean, just everybody, the minute we see things and read things and hear things that we don't like, it just wrecks us internally, as opposed to just taking a step back and saying, you know what? I totally disagree with the people I'm on air with. 100% disagree with them. But there's something there that I can agree with, and we can right. go off air and be like, hey, you want to grab a beer? Yeah, let's grab a beer.
Right.
People have a hard time doing that now. The minute that you say something I disagree with, I hate you. I can't like you because you disagree with me.
I saw something on social media that, and I like social media. I think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
But the saying was, God gives us everything we want to punish us.
Hmm.
And, you know, I'm not a religious person. I don't beat that drum. I have a relationship with that. But I just thought it was an interesting phrase, you know, because it's so, you know, we are, and you look at people and you look at ourselves, we're programmed to kind of want, right? Want. And if we get it, that's good, right? And if we don't get it, that's bad. You know, I always tell my kids, are you happy? Yes. I said, well, I'm doing a bad job, right? You know, because, you know, but it's creating character, right? Not characters. And if you live in a life that's just kind of in that same, like, I remember as a kid, what do you want to do when you grow up? I want to be a millionaire. Millionaire, right? That is the goal that I had. And it's really a terrible goal, right? Because I don't know, and listen, make money, be happy, whatever. But I know the more money that I have, the worse my life gets. But it gets better in the eyes of everybody else. But in my life, it's tough. And it's because I'm getting what I want. Now all of a sudden I don't have to work as hard for something. And then all of a sudden I got a little more free time. And then I got time to judge and be critical and start thinking of others. And next thing you know, I've painted F. Trump all over my truck and I've parked it down at the beach. Right? You know, I've gone into this place. It's tough.
Well, you know, it's crazy you say that. So you take like problems, right? Like the pandemic. Let's talk about the pandemic, right? So you take that, and I did a lot of media on this, and I do these shows and people say, well, you know, Eric, we're all in the same boat, right? We're all in the same boat with this. And I would say, no, we're not all in the same boat, actually. I would say we're all in the same storm. But our level of mental capacity determined the boat we came into the storm on, meaning that from a mental standpoint, I might be on a 50-foot yacht fully staffed, right? From a mental standpoint, you might be in a 5-foot inflatable with a hole in the boat and one paddle. So to say we're all in the same boat is not accurate.
Who do you think would be happier?
The yacht or the boat?
Yeah.
That's a very, very subjective question.
That's a crazy question, right? I mean, at the end of the day, at 10 p.m., at the end of the day, you sit down, you know, I'm picturing the guy with the holes been like paddling or scooping water out just to try to make it to shore, just to say, like, I got to survive. And the guy on the 50-foot yacht's what, sipping champagne. He's at the epitome of what everybody thinks is happiness. And if you were to look at the guy in the boat, you'd think that'd be the epitome of horribleness, right? The worst. But at the end of the day, who goes, wow?
Well, and here's the thing, because that's really more for me personally, that's more of a metaphor from mental capacity, meaning that somebody might be fully mentally competent to the point where this happens, they don't feel anything about it, no big deal, because I'm so strong mentally that I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm on my yacht. Everything's wonderful. The person in the inflatable with a hole in it with one paddle, from a mental capacity standpoint, they might have been teetering right on the edge prior to this pandemic. So they were just getting by mentally. They're getting by. They're okay. Everything's wonderful. The minute that pandemic kicks in, it exacerbates. It's now a 100 instead of a 10. So it's who was prepared coming into this. big thing with kids, right? We talk about kids like, hey, this is a scary thing for them. If you really want to take a step back and think about it, this is really comparable to September 11th from their standpoint. Like what we went through, the catastrophic event of September 11th, from a kid's standpoint, it's really equivalent to that. It's scary for them. Think about it. They have grandpa and grandma are dying. They can't go to the store and get food. They can't go to school. They got to wear a mask. This is a catastrophic event for them. So from a parent standpoint, it's critically important that we address those issues, address those feelings, let them know 100% of what you're feeling is okay. Every single feeling you have right now is okay. It's how you respond to those feelings that's important. That's what we have to teach kids. Don't try to stop the feeling. Don't try to ignore the feeling. Don't try to turn it off. Let's find constructive ways to address it, label it. I call this an emotional vocabulary. Let's label the feeling, get to the core of what's causing it. So when it happens in the future, ultimately what we're doing is we're teaching our kids coping mechanisms they will use for the rest of their life.
Right.
I don't want my kids to go through this. You don't want your kids to go through it. It makes me disgustingly ill to my stomach.
I thought it was great.
There were positives to it. I miss parts of it. You know, I miss the Yahtzee playing Yahtzee.
I hate the masks. Yeah. But I actually thought it was a great, I thought it was a great reset. I think it was a great, you know, we were in a, you know, the fact that, you know, my kid, like I told my son who's 17, he'll be 17 in August. He's making $16 an hour. I went to University of Rutgers. I went to Rutgers University and got a degree in turf management. I was making $12 an hour at a golf course. And now he makes $16 an hour. You know, there was something that was going on, and I won't point fingers, but you know, we were underpaid. People were underpaid, and we were in a place that, you know, if you didn't go to college, you got punished. It's not fair. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be that way. And now I feel like we're in this place. First of all, everybody's, you know, listen, if you lost somebody during COVID, I lost my mom during COVID, so thoughts and prayers, but we're over it. But there was this. You know, this thing that happened that people were like, I didn't work and I made it. Like, I survived. Like, I know it seems like ever since I can remember, I've always had this financial insecurity. Like, I've got to have a job. I've got to make it. How much am I, you know, are we going to make it this month? It's always this, you know, regardless if you make $50,000, $100,000, it's still like everything needs to still be in place for things to not completely collapse. And when we went through that, I think everybody was like, whoa. And completely collapse, you know. And now people are starting to get paid. People are starting to recognize, you know, with the gas thing, everybody's like so upset. And I go, you know, driving to the beach to look at the waves, now it just costs you a little bit more money. That's all. I mean, you know, it's a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not a right to drive to the beach to look at waves. I remember people, oh, we're just going to drive down to the beach and look at the waves. It's like, well, maybe you'll think a little more about that when you put that $5 gallon gas in.
Well, and I think what it goes back to also is just recognizing that we can do more with less, right? I think we were, as a society, let's say we were extremely inefficient in the way we did things, and COVID brought to light ways to make do, right? In the Marine Corps, it's improvise, adapt, and overcome. There's an issue, you improvise, you adapt, you overcome. COVID required everyone to improvise, adapt, and overcome.
Mm.
Now, the thing that concerns me is that does not apply to mental health issues. And that is something I talk quite a bit about. You know, it's like people, especially military, you cannot apply improvise, adapt, and overcome as it relates to mental health issues. That is absolutely something that we have to get much better at, especially males, boys. Boys have got to, they have got to be taught, they have got to learn that their feelings are okay. As a society, we have got to stop making boys feel like they're weak or any of these other crazy things because they express how they feel. That's a problem.
Yeah.
78% of fatal heroin overdoses, males. 82%, 90%+ of mass shootings, males. Like, why is that? Like, why is it?
Well, mass shootings and overdoses are a little different.
True, but I'm just talking about
89% of them didn't want to overdose.
I'm talking about stats on why do we see it more prevalent in males than females. What is it? Like, why is that? Like, I feel, again, get to the core of the issue. Why is it that boys are committing these crimes? There's lots of reasons why. A big part of it, I think, is lack of fathers. But another piece of it is they're just not allowed to express how they feel. If you can't express something, it's like sneezing, right? When I was a kid, Eric, don't hold in your sneezes, your lungs will collapse. It's the same concept with emotions. If you have these boys, or not just boys, just anyone in general who's constantly trying to shut off that feeling out of fear of some sort of being labeled something, if they're never able to release that, what do you think is going to happen? It just overflows. It explodes. And it prevents people from living happy lives because they're constantly worried about, I can't express this feeling because if I say this, and again, especially from guy's standpoint, if I say this, I'm going to be looked at as being weak and I can't be labeled as weak. So you know what? Suck it up, buttercup. And that does not work. That absolutely does not work.
Well, we don't practice that at my house. We practice prayer. We practice recognizing. We practice communication. My younger son, Sam, he's more of an emotional guy. Gets emotional around school, anxiety and fear, you know, and not fitting in, all that same shit that I think we all go through. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have a prayer for it, and we don't ask for anything. We just recognize. We find the humility to open our mouth and say it out loud. You know, my buddy Matt used to say, if you have an issue, find someone, say it out loud. It'll cut it in half.
Totally agree.
Cut that in half.
Yeah.
He used to say, go to the mailbox every day, take out the mail. If it's a bill, take out the bill, pay it, put it back in the mailbox. It'll be done. If you do not, that $25 bill that you owe, unattended, left in a mailbox, will turn to 50. Mm-hmm. Will turn to 75. It will turn to 100. It'll have the power of being a $100 bill. And then when you reopen it, you realize it's still just $25, but you carried around all that bullshit. And that's what we do. I practice this with my kids. I say, listen, have you prayed about it? We sit down in the prayer. We say, we only have one prayer. Dear Lord, my shoulders aren't big enough. I'm turning this over to you. It's just humility.
Yes. And if we acknowledge it, and we also need to understand that as emotional creatures, again, we're hardwired to feel first and think later. We're all entitled to our own emotional responses to situations, no matter how ill-calibrated I might think it is. So a situation happens. I respond this way. You respond that way. I'm not right. You're not wrong. We are just entitled to experience it however we want to experience it, as opposed to, Tom, why'd you reply to it that way? That's crazy. Why would you ever experience that? Like, why'd that make you feel that way? It's like, who am I to tell you how you're supposed to feel? If we could stop trying to change other people's feelings and start recognizing that they're entitled to feel how they feel, let's get to the core of what's causing the issue. Why is it that you feel the way you feel? Now, when you get put in those situations again, in your brain, you can mentally prepare for these situations. This is called systematic desensitization. Two of the biggest words in my language. Don't ask me how to spell them. We gradually
spell them. Spell them.
I can don't actually fail.
Don't fail on the podcast.
SYSTEMATICALOYDESENSITAZT. I have no idea.
You knew how to spell it. You wanted me to ask you. You wanted to shine.
If we prepare our brains for this time, what we're able to do is when we're in these situations, we can say, you know what, been here before. When I experience this feeling, this is why I'm experiencing the feeling. So now I can respond. When we respond, we process information logically. When we react, it's knee-jerk, emotion-based. Don't try to turn off the emotion. Acknowledge what it is that's causing it and find healthy ways to address it.
Yeah. Well, I feel like I'm a great representation of this world. And that's just this guy that, you know, I was born in 1968, had a pretty decent early childhood. Met the coolest guy in the entire world, and he offered to let me try smoking some little bit of pot and drink a little bit of beer. And I was so impressed by this guy that I was into it, whether I liked it or not. I remember trying to drink vodka and keeping my lips closed, you know, but I just act like I drank because I wanted to impress this kid. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, after however many years of carrying on that way, finally coming to a point in my life where sobriety seemed like an option, and I identify as a self-centered asshole with a deficiency in humility.
Hmm.
You know, I'm not an addict. I just like doing what I want to do, and I don't have any humility in my life. And I think that's sort of where a lot of people are. I feel like it's sort of where this whole world is. What aren't we getting? How is it affecting me? And I'm going to tell you how upset I am about it. Instead of like restraining from pen and tongue, keeping our mouths shut, and finding some accountability and going with the flow. That's the basis of that prayer. You know, you could say, Dear Lord, I'm not making enough money. Please send me money. That's old time prayer. New time prayer is, Dear Lord, my shoulders aren't big enough. I'm turning this over to you. Don't fix it. I don't want him to do anything. I'm just recognizing because I have a lack. I'm deficient in humility. I'd rather keep it to myself and die with it than just say it out loud and start practicing these new things. And, you know, one of them is being accountability. I shouldn't have bought an iPhone, right? I shouldn't have bought Nike shoes. I mean, people love to point out that these relationships we have with other countries and how they're screwing us over. But, you know, you got your Nikes on and you got your iPhone on and you're driving your whatever car you're driving. We all play a part.
Yeah.
Stop. People say, oh, these people coming into our country. I go, well, then stop eating fruits and vegetables and pistachios and walnuts and almonds because those are the people that are picking them, right? And if that's what you're upset about, then stop eating that food. I personally think if a person wants to walk 50,000 miles across the world and come to our border, I say, let that guy in. That's heart.
Yeah, and I think we'd all agree on that. It's the way they enter that's most critically important. Is it legally or illegally? That's another conversation. Going back to what you just said, though, I think it is a matter of when it comes to addiction, when it comes to any major change we want to make in our life, the one core component to that is we have to find something that we're insanely dissatisfied with. I have never suffered from addiction. I have lots of friends who have. I had lots of people I tried to help, people I was in the Marine Corps with that I did.
You don't like Oreos?
But don't like what?
Oreos.
I love Oreos.
Well, maybe that's your addiction.
I shouldn't have said it that way. Yeah. I never had an addiction to any type
of
substance.
You ever come to a fork in the road and you do what you should do or what you want to do?
It's an addiction.
That's an addiction.
And I've never, so I don't speak from a place of actually experiencing it myself because right. I never had to. But the one thing that I found in people that I work with and friends that I've experienced, they get to a point where they have to be insanely dissatisfied with some part of their life.
Yeah.
Weight, drugs, business, relationship. Once they're insanely dissatisfied, that's where it all starts. Because now they're
getting
be
better or getting worse.
Either way, doesn't matter. So if they're, it just requires dissatisfaction. So let's say as it relates to dieting. Okay, dieting. If I'm insanely dissatisfied with my weight the way I am, I will make the changes I need to make regardless of what the cost is I have to pay. If I'm not dissatisfied, if I look in the mirror and say, you know what, I don't see myself as being overweight and I weigh 450 and my doctor tells me I'm going to die, if I personally don't see myself and if I'm not dissatisfied with my weight, I'm not going to create the habits that are going to lead to weight loss. It's just not going to happen. The price is too high. I don't make change. People don't make change until they're dissatisfied with something. Once they're dissatisfied, then they make the change.
I call it complete ego devastation.
That's
humiliation.
I love it.
I say, you want to, if someone's overweight and can't stop eating, put them on a chair, cut way halfway through the leg, and when it collapses on them in front of a huge group of people, then they're like, oh my God, I need to do something about my weight. You know, like humiliation, but quietly, I always say, you get along and do whatever it is you're doing as long as you have an audience.
Yes.
Right? As long as there's a group of people that are like, you're going to be okay. Let's get them next time, you know, until the audience runs out. When the audience is gone, then changes start to happen. And that's unfortunately, you know, that's why I'm deficient in humility. That was my whole thing. When I got sober, it wasn't because I was exhausted from lifting alcohol to my mouth. It's because I got punched in the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't want to explain.
Good call.
Stitches, getting my ass kicked, what happened, another one of these incidents. I just said, I'd rather hide somewhere. But that was what it took, the beginning of me getting sober. But it wasn't because complete exhaustion from lifting glasses.
You were dissatisfied. That was your pain, right?
So I was embarrassed. I was humiliated.
Yeah. It's still a pain, right? That's a pain. It's a form of pain.
Yeah,
it could be physical. It could be emotional. It could be anything. And that's the whole key. That's my core component. Once you're dissatisfied with something, then you have to develop your why it is what you do. And then you need the how part of it. So if you're dissatisfied, you have a strong emotionally charged why, and you have the ABCs and 1, 2, 3s, the cost becomes irrelevant. If the why is strong enough, the how is easy. And it's really for anything in life. If your why and what you're doing and why you're doing it, if that is strong enough, it's the analogy of the mom driving to the mall with her child and the car, she gets in an accident and the van flips over and she lifts up her car to save her child. How is she able to do that? She's able to do that because every ounce of her being is there to protect that child.
Yeah.
If we have a why that's that strong, which most people don't, if we have a why that's that strong, the how's easy. It just makes its way because I'm so ensconced in whatever it is that I believe so deeply and I'd be willing to jump in front of a bus for it. Everything else becomes easy. Nobody has emotionally charged whys. Vision boards, call them what you want to call them. Nobody has those. So we just wander around aimlessly, setting goals, relying on motivation. We wake up, we feel good, we stick to it. We wake up, we feel bad, we're out running around drinking a gallon of vodka and throwing up all over ourselves. There's nothing there that guides us. There's nothing. There's nothing there that really, truly keeps us going when the going gets tough. That's the power of the why. That's a big part of it.
Did you hear about the accident this weekend in, between Dewey and Bethany? The Lyft driver?
Mm-mm.
So this Lyft driver, I guess he's called a group of six people down in Dewey Beach, right, at 1:45 in the morning, call a Lyft driver. The guy comes and picks him up, taking him to Bethany Beach. Halfway across that path, I guess a couple minutes into the trip, the Lyft driver stops in the middle of the road and throws him out.
Wow.
Apparently a big argument took place. I can only imagine what had happened, but throws these people out of the car, stops in the middle of Route 1 on the southbound lane, throws them out. A car coming down Route 1 to avoid hitting the rear end of the Lyft car swerves around, kills one of the people in the middle of the road.
Wow.
It happened Saturday. I'm like, oh my God. And then the Lyft driver left. I don't know where he's at.
Wow. I didn't hear that.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like, I just, it blows me away. I mean, I would be the guy in that freaking car. I would be the guy obnoxiously busting on the Lyft driver and getting thrown out, you know, and going, what happened? Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just blown away by that story. I just couldn't believe it. And the fact that the guy took off, but you know, one of the great things for me, luckily that, you know, whatever it was, for whatever reason, I got sober. You know, those are that's the kind of shit that would happen to me. And then I would be like, the Lyft driver's fault, right? And granted, he probably shouldn't have let him out in the middle of the highway. It's turning out that he made some bad choices, but, you know, it's the zero accountability. It would be, to me, the Lyft driver's fault, everything, everybody else's fault, none of my fault. And
well, and there's a reason behind that, because think about it. You know, I talk about this truth versus fact, right? A fact's a fact. If it's 8 degrees outside, that's a fact. Whether or not 8 degrees is hot or cold is your perception of right. heat. That's your truth. So 8 degrees to somebody living in Alaska is crazy hot. 8 degrees to somebody living in the Mojave Desert is not very hot at all.
Right.
In our lives, a lot of times what we do is we take things in our brain, we make ourselves believe they're facts and they're not. Because the minute our brain says that's a fact, we say we can't change it. So if us and our brain say these things are facts, we shut down any type of mental process towards whatever it is because it's a fact. I can't change it. It's a distinction in thinking. So if we take these things that we believe are facts when really it's just our perception of it, if we're now able to analyze that, we know that we have an ability to change it. And a lot of things we can change.
Well, and a lot of the problems that ended up happening, I think, at least from in my life, didn't happen overnight, right? It's one day at a time, one cookie at a time, one drink at a time. You know, I was telling somebody the other day, if I took myself, the person I am today, and dropped me into the person I was in 1996, I'd be like, oh my God. Like, but at the time in 1996, I was fine with it, right? Because I had evolved into this place. And it takes some time, one day at a time, to evolve out of it,
mm-hmm.
right? We didn't get here overnight. We're not getting out of here overnight. And I think a lot of the times, speaking for myself, you know, I want to take a long time to get to the problem, but I want to fix it overnight. And I don't seem to have the ability to say, listen, man, one day at a time, let's just put one foot in front of the other, just do the next right thing and just keep, you know, and we'll slowly get out of it.
Well, and that's another downside I would say to social media. I call it the swipe right society, right? So we have a society now, especially with kids, who can't understand and appreciate.
And adults, I'm bad into it.
I got it, but we've been there. We experience hard work. We know what we remember layaway in the store, right? We remember buying something and put on layaway.
Yeah.
Kids these days never experienced that before, so they only know swipe right. They only know I need to ride swipe right there at the front door. They only know I want to buy something on Amazon, it's on my front doorstep tomorrow. They only know go into a dating app, swipe right, find somebody. If I don't like them tomorrow, I'll swipe right on somebody else. That's all they know. Not saying we're immune to this as adults, but in our brain, we have the mental capacity to remember when times weren't this way. And also to understand that that's not a healthy way for meaningful relationships and for true happiness. We recognize that we've been there. Kids only know swipe right. So what you find is there's no appreciation for things they have. And I'm not saying this is 100% absolutely positively, but there's no hard work that goes into what we do. They did a study, I think it was millennials, doesn't really matter, but I think it was millennials, and they said, what's your biggest issue with work, your job that you work right now? What's the biggest problem? And these were all people who had been on the job for less than a year. And the number one thing they came back with, they said, I'm not making a big enough impact on my company. And I hear that, and I think you've been at your job for a year. How much impact do you think you're going to make on your company in 1 year? It's the sprint versus the marathon mentality, right? You're not just automatically going to snap fingers. There's no hard work. There's no appreciation on, again, I use layaway all the time. Like layaway was the thing. If you wanted it, okay, great. Put a down payment on it and come in once a week. And 6 months later, you'll get whatever it is that you want. There's no appreciation for that. And kids haven't experienced that.
How come credit doesn't take as big of a beating as social media?
Good question. Yeah, but you mean the ability to actually buy stuff on credit card?
The ability to buy shit that you can't afford and live beyond your means. Nobody, you know, nobody talks about the role of alcohol in our lives, and nobody talks about the role of credit.
Yeah.
You know, between those two things, I think it brings more pain and suffering to a community than anything else.
True, but I would say from a credit standpoint, that is from a financial, like I want this right now, as opposed to social media in the context of relationships, deep, meaningful relationships.
Yeah.
People rely on that, assuming that they can only get happiness off of how much interaction they get on social media, not understanding that true relationships are built by going through adversity, handling people, dealing with people that you have nothing in agreement with, meeting people and having uncomfortable conversations that are not easy to do. So what do you rely on? You rely on text messaging. Again, these are all tools and techniques, and I'm not saying it's 100%. There are definitely huge benefits to it, but I feel like we're eliminating a part of growth and a part of establishing relationships from the equation for a lot of people, that if they don't have those skills when they get put in situations, they have no idea how to handle it. It's why people automatically defer to anger when somebody says something they don't like. They haven't been taught anything. It's like a baby crying for a toy. They just don't know. They have no idea. So we get pushed through a school system that teaches us to memorize or regurgitate. Nobody teaches us how to handle an opposing point of view. We now go out in the work. Somebody says something we don't like. We've never been taught how to handle that. So all I'm going to do is yell and scream and get angry with you and call you mean names. It's all I know. As opposed to the way we grew up, we know that there's an issue. Let's handle the issue. Let's deal with it. And again, I'm not saying 100% of adults are good at this.
I did not grow up like that.
No, but I'm not saying it's 100% of the time. But if there was an issue, you met in the parking lot and you handled it at lunchtime. It's what we did. There's no more of that anymore. It's I'm going to dox you. I'm going to put your home address on social media. I'm going to say mean things to you. I'm going to take pictures of you and I'm going to tag you and I'm going to send it out to all your friends list of you doing something, getting drunk or doing whatever. It's totally demoralizing people. And if they don't know how to deal with somebody socially, there are problems. Again, never 100%. I'm not one of those type people. Never 100% of the time. But
I think what's going on is you and I are getting older. Okay. And our journey here is coming to an end, and we're going to go out fighting. Because it's, you know, my dad's the same way at 85. And I said, that's why we die. Mm-hmm. We just can't take it. We cannot take it to you know, and my dad's generation, once they die off, and once you and I's generation dies off, we'll have no more stories about, you know, my dad used to catch crabs in the morning and shuck corn by lunch and then pick blueberries and then sweep out the church and, you know, ride around on his bike through the town and this whole world that they lived in. Compared to our world is completely different, and compared to my kids' world, it'll be a completely different place. So
sure,
there's a reason why we're about here 85 years.
Yeah,
I was reading a book called The Fourth Turning. I don't know if you've read that. It's an interesting book, but it talks about this right now in the crisis. This is this 85 year period of time, that a lifetime really, and it's happened many times: Revolutionary War, World War II. You know, at the end of it, you know, we have the big crisis and then the uprising and then the celebration when it's all over and then the rebuilding. And it's kind of what we've been going through, but we are in the end of it, the crisis. And according to the book, we're headed towards a revelation or a revolution, maybe both. I don't know. But there will be, and I feel it building now, like this real unhappiness. And but it talks about, and then it says that the saving grace, the savior of the whole thing will be the millennials, the artists. And if you said that to somebody like you and I, I'd be like, they don't know how to get up and work, right? They don't know how to work all day. They're millennials. Well, but they're artists. And where this, you know, the world is headed, this meta, you know, there is a whole world of people that do art in the meta, that you buy stuff. And it doesn't work for you and I, but it's what's next. And it may be very true. It may be the millennials that save our civilization, right? The artists.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to go to any generation, I feel like every generation is always going to look at the one that's coming up behind them and be like, come on, man. Like, really, you do it the wrong way. We're all obviously going to make our way through it. And I feel like, you know, going back to like with LifeMed, from the physical piece of it, I feel like when we get to where we are now, there's so much we can do that we can be happy with hanging out and doing whatever. If the physical piece isn't there, obviously that makes it difficult. I am concerned about how people now getting older are taking care of themselves, because I do feel like...
Well, let's get back to life, man. Yeah. I don't know where we went on the whole...
That was my fault. Yeah, I went off on a tangent. Well, there was a squirrel outside.
Let's wrap this up and let's really focus on it. So like older people, you're recommending come check out the place, get an idea. Maybe that you do offer some stuff that can help you if you are older, maybe not getting as much exercise.
100%. Yeah. So like I talked about initially, you know, we start off with that blood panel, and that's where every patient who comes in, if they're like, hey, I feel this.
Do you do that at the place? Can you get the blood panel done there, or do they have to go to a blood place and get the panel and then send it to you?
Yeah, they go to a blood. So what happens is when they come in initially, we would upload forms in the Quest. That's the main place. And there's actually one right here in Lewis.
Okay.
We'd upload the forms in the Quest. They would go there and get their blood panel done on their own. They fast. We like for you to fast for 8 hours prior. The day that blood panel is done, we're scheduling them to meet with one of our providers, normally about 2 weeks out from the day they have the blood panel done. So blood panel comes back, they sit down with one of our providers. And again, like I told you earlier, this is a blood panel that's looking for everything internally. So we don't want to, our providers are not going to make suggestions, recommendations, or they're not going to give any type of medical advice without knowing what's happening internally. There could be some crazy stuff. We've had patients come in that, you know, hey, I feel this, I feel that. We do their blood panel. We've sent them back to their primary care. They could have had cancer.
Right.
PSA levels, prostate levels, guys over 40, we check PSA levels. There could be issues with prostate. So when somebody comes to us saying they're having an ED issue, let's say, they're treating it with all these pills, all these medications. They've never gotten to the core of the issue. It could be a prostate problem. So we start off with that initial blood panel. Once we have that, we know everything that's happening internally. From there, we can make suggestions and recommendations. A lot of times it's hormone replacement therapy. Sometimes it's just a vitamin deficiency. We have our own medical grade supplement line. These are medical grade supplements that 99% of what's on the label is inside the bottle, as opposed to going to like a big box store.
Does any of this fall under insurance?
So we consider ourselves to be concierge wellness, meaning that the only thing that could be covered by insurance would be the initial blood panel. We're very cautious about that because, you know, if we run that initial blood panel through insurance, then you're going to be susceptible to co-pays and deductibles. But if your insurance covers it, that piece would be. If not, the initial blood panel is $199, and that's an agreement we have with Quest, basically. Mm-hmm. So for the $199 cash pay, that would cover everything, the whole blood panel. And then when you meet with a provider, you spend about an hour and a half with them. There's $150 doctor's fee for that, a visit fee, a wellness fee. If you don't start any kind of hormone replacement therapy, if you do start hormone replacement therapy, the $150 gets waived at that point.
Okay. Let's talk about the service. So there is hormone replacement therapy.
Yes. We try to balance that out. So depending on, for guys, it's testosterone. So we can do that with pills, sublinguals, creams, injections. Guys normally do injections. So once a week they would come into our facility to get the injection, or we can also ship it to their house. One of our nurses would show you how to actually inject yourself. It's in the glute. We could ship it to your house in quarterly supplies. It comes with everything that you need, the syringes, the testosterone, the wipes. The bulk of our patients come into the facility once a week and have that done. For ladies, same options pretty much, pills, sublinguals. A lot of the ladies really love the pellet treatment. It's a tiny little insertion, a tiny little incision right on the side of the glute. We insert slow-release pellets underneath the skin. Quarterly, we replenish them. The whole goal with that is to balance out those hormones, because a lot of times the issues they're experiencing, guys and girls, it can be a hormone imbalance, especially for ladies. You know, if they were on birth control, if they're premenopausal, these are all things that they're just like, hey, it's part of life. This is my age. This is what I have to deal with night sweats, with brain fog. You don't have to. There might be a way to make life better that way.
Right. All this sounds like something that would work for me.
There's very few people that don't benefit from, well, let me take a step back. There's 0.0% of people who don't benefit from at least having the blood panel done. For $199 and $150 doctor visit, call it $350 total, to know what's happening internally. This is no blood panel you've ever had before. Your primary care sends you out to check for five or six different things. They're checking LDLs, HDLs, triglycerides, maybe. We're doing everything internally. So if nothing else, you're spending $350 to know what's happening inside.
That's great. I love it. Well, listen, we've a couple of chatty Cathys here. I didn't realize. Will you come back sometime?
I would love the opportunity.
So you've been open for just a few months now?
It's just about a month. This facility is just about a month.
Okay. And like I said, you're over there across from Giant, across from AT&T. You're in that behind this shall we golf? it's in the cantina's over there. So I don't want people going over to Agave because it's not, they're sort of close, but you'll miss.
Yes.
But so you're over there. We saw it. It looks like you guys are doing great. Spend a little time, you know, working, and then maybe we'll have you back on, or we will have you, not maybe, we'll have you back on, and you can tell us how it's going.
I would love that, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Sorry we got off on a tangent. I don't know what this thing is. It's tangent day.
We go where we go.
All right, pal. I'll catch you later. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Your website?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. It's lifemedinstitute.com. We're also over social media, Facebook, Instagram.
What's your Instagram?
My Instagram is Eric Rittmeyer.
No, if we want to follow you on is it Life Med?
Yeah, so it's Life Med Institute. If you just go on directly to Life, just go on the Instagram, type in Life Med Institute. You'll see our logo pop up, black logo, white LM letters, Life Med Institute. Then also on Facebook as well.
Cool. Well, listen, thank you, and we'll catch you later.
Sounds good, Tom. All right, thanks, sir.
Bye.